share your story, please.
I left Toronto about 2 hours ago. I didn't think I was going to make it. I have St. Maximilian Kolbe for his intercession, and I'm here. So, thank you, St. Maximilian Kolbe. I also want to thank Vicki Thorne. Vicki gave me her personal phone number a couple of years ago, and I've given that number out so many times to so many people. Thank you, Vicki Thorne, for all your time. I met the young woman in a bar once, and I think it was 2 in the morning. And one thing led to another. She just had an abortion. She was crying, and I called Vicki at 2 in the morning. So don't ever give me your personal phone number, any I'd also like to thank the Knights of Columbus and the diocese for putting this event on. This is a special day for me because for 20 years, I've been talking about my involvement in an abortion. I've given talks in 44 states and several countries, but I never gave a talk in Chicago, Illinois. And it was 20 years ago this fall that my experience with abortion took place in Chicago. I'm from Chicago, originally. It was shortly before my 17th birthday that my high school sweetheart told me she was pregnant. And she was a good Catholic girl. I was raised in a very secular family. I never heard abortion discussed one way or the other. I didn't even think I knew about abortion. And we never thought about abortion. In fact, the first thought I remember, I was happy. I don't know why I was happy. Sometimes I wish that wouldn't have been my initial response. I don't remember being overly worried. I just remember thinking, I have to figure out a plan. So we had a very sophisticated plan. She was going to wear baggy sweaters, and I would drop out of high school and join the Army. And so my birthday was a few days later. That's exactly what I did. I dropped out of high school. It wasn't a real big loss. Out of 565 students at Amos Alonzo Stagg High School, I was 565. It's true. I had good grades in the spring, so I needed to be eligible for football, but after football season, down they went. And dropped out of high school. A few weeks later, I was off to basic training. And to tell you how silly our society is, I still had my Scooby-Doo pillowcase. I didn't own a suitcase, so I had to take my pillowcase. My recruiter said, use your pillowcase and put your toiletries in. So I had, toothpaste stains and Scooby-Doo on one side. So I had to turn it inside out, and I put my toiletries into the bag, and off to Fort Benning, Georgia, I went. And for her part, and I thought she had the easy part, all she had to do was wear baggy sweaters and take vitamins. That was our plan. And like a lot of girlfriends do, she'd send me lots of letters. Now, how many veterans are here? So, you don't want to get a lot of letters. You want to get letters, but not a lot, because for each letter you get, you have to do push-ups. A lot of push-ups. But that wasn't the worst part. She'd also send me food. That's the worst part, because, all the food you get, the drill sergeants, Congress requires us to allow you to eat all of this food, so eat it now, all of it, and run. And so I finally convinced her, don't send me so many letters and no more food. And that's why I was surprised on a Sunday morning, just a few weeks before I was to get out of basic training. I wasn't raised Christian, I didn't go to church, so on Sunday I got pots and pans detail, which I liked, because I discovered the drill sergeants hid ice cream bars in the freezer behind the pots and pans, which I could steal and trade for people to polish my shoes. And so I liked having pots and pans detail, and I was cleaning pots and pans, and a friend of mine came running in and said, your girlfriend's on the phone. And I said, tell her to call next Sunday, because this isn't my Sunday for phone calls. So, well, she's crying. So I ran out, and I answered the phone. And she was crying like I've never heard a woman before or since cry in my life. And the only way I can describe it is that her soul was crying. And she kept saying over and over and over again, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. It wasn't me. And then I could hear her father. Her father said over the other line, Jason, we know your secret, and your secret's gone. She had an abortion. With that, my drill sergeant reached over my shoulder and hung up the phone. I turned around and I punched him. He was out. I was crying. My captain came running over because I just punched the drill sergeant out. And I said, call the police. They killed my baby. And he said, who killed your baby? I'm like, her grandfather. he's crying, I didn't know you had a baby. He pulled me into his office and he said, how old was your child? And he has the phone in his hand. I said, well, she was going to be born in 2 or 3 months. He looked at me kind of surprised. He said, you mean she had an abortion? I said, yes. He said, that's not illegal. I wish the whole world could see abortion the way this naive 17-year-old saw abortion. You know, I hear politicians say that they don't know when life begins or it's above their pay grade. I was last in my class at Amos Alonzo State High School. I knew when human life began. And I was horrified. I love my country. But I was shocked. My drill sergeant gave me, my captain gave me, you know, a quick little cliff note. History of abortion in this country. He gave me a roll of quarters. And he said, you go call your girlfriend. Don't come back until you have the quarters. So I walked to the PX. Now, I was originally, I was raised all over the South Side. I lived in Harvey and Homewood and Palos Hills and Country Club Hills. And until 8th grade, I spent most of my life in Harvey and Country Club. It was great. Very diverse community. And I remember in the 7th grade when I saw my first video of the Civil Rights Movement. I saw young children who just wanted to go into a soda shop and get a soda, get attacked by dogs. Grown men representing the law, wearing badges. Men, grown men, badges. Attacking children. And I remember how that made me feel as a 7th grader. The only way I can explain the sadness I felt, not just for the loss of my childhood, for the loss of, you know, I just, a faith in my country. I walked to the PX, and I called her, and we talked. I don't know what, I'm a new Catholic, I know what prompted me to say this, but I remember promising her that day that if it took me the rest of my life, I will end abortion. I made that promise that day. I make a lot of promises I don't, you know, keep much of. I'm a new Catholic every Lent. I give up Catholic, I give up coffee. You know, and then 3 days later, I start praying a rosary every day for the coffee I drink. Who does that? Okay, who knew you could do that? I'm a new Catholic for 2 years. I didn't drink a drop of coffee. And someone says, no, you can just pray the rosary in place and start drinking coffee. And I said, Shazam, I didn't know that. But this is one promise. And even though I was, for my first 12 years doing pro-life work, I was an atheist. And it was not until I was a spokesperson for a Catholic organization for several years that the truth hit me upside the head and I became a Catholic. But immediately following the abortion, I became very aggressive. On my first year in the Army, I had 3 Article 15s. If you get 3 Article 15s in the course of a career in the military, you're supposed to be automatically booted. I don't know how my guardian angel managed to not get me booted. I ended up having 5 Article 15s. And if a man told me he was pro-choice, it would be better to clear the room. I still have a lot of hostility toward men who say that they're pro-choice or pro-abortion. There's this radio talk show host, his name is Likas. Has anyone ever heard of this talk show? National talk show host. And he does this skit, he tells his callers, if you get your girlfriend pregnant, what you have to do is you have to tell her you love her, and you want to marry her. And this is great. We're going to have a kid, but not yet. We need us time together. He's like, then you got to schedule a vacation. Get a vacation really quick. 2 weeks down the line. So then you got a deadline. So she has to have the abortion before the deadline because you say, I had this trip planned to Jamaica. And then as you take her to Jamaica, he says, have your last hurrah. But when you get back, break up with her because abortion ruins women. This is a national radio talk show. So I don't hear feminist groups condemning this guy. And so I had a lot of hostility. I had 5 Article 15s. I got out of the Army. In the Army on my off days, I was learning how to channel it. So sometimes I would channel it, not a good way. Somebody would tell me they're pro-choice, I'd hit them. Not a good way, especially when they're a corporal, which I did. But a good way was, on my off days, I would just go door to door. In these Hawaiian neighborhoods, I was stationed in Hawaii, and I would go door to door. There was no internet. I didn't know there was a pro-life movement. So I just thought, I have to convince half of America that this is wrong. I'll start on my days off, going door to door in Hawaii. And I would go with a hawley with short hair, you know, my PX clothes, go door to door and just knock on doors and say, excuse me, can I talk to you about abortion? Do you know abortion's legal? What was surprising, this was 1989, most of these people didn't believe, there's a lot of Filipino plantation workers, didn't believe abortion was legal. They're sort of the same way I was. They couldn't believe it. They would, oh my, crazy hawley, go away. No abortion here, no abortion legal. And I got out of the Army, and I went from going door to door volunteering for pro-life groups, discovered one political party tends to support life more than the other. I started working with that political party and certain candidates. But still, I didn't know how to deal with it. I got kicked out of the dorms, two different dormitories, for guys making a mistake of vocally saying around me that they were pro-choice. But step by step, I learned to not be as aggressive and not be as violent, and to channel that energy out into constructive ways. Something Vicky Thorne told me once horrified me. She said, "Jason, you know all that energy has been driving you for 15 years? This is 5 years ago, I think she told me this. For day in and day out, I'm like, yes, it's in every cell of my body. Day in and day out, she said, for women, that energy goes in. For men, it goes out. And that broke my heart. Because I thought of my girlfriend in high school. And I thought, if all of this energy that's going outside of me is going in, how horribly painful that must be." I started knocking on doors. I started running political campaigns in Hawaii. I moved to Washington, D.C. I started running political campaigns. Most recently, I was the national grassroots director for Brownback for President. I also had the privilege of being the co-executive producer of a film called Bella. And I can't tell you how great it is. I've been on, 3,000 stages over the past 3 years with Eduardo Verástegui. Standing next to Eduardo Verástegui, it's like walking on the beach, in a G-string bikini with Arnold Schwarzenegger. You don't want to stand on a stage with Eduardo every day, But it was an incredible privilege. And I'm still committed to keeping that promise. And I know with the courage of Project Rachel, the Knights of Columbus, and when we as Catholics, this is a diverse group, but when we stand up, especially men who are responsible for abortions, one out of three men are responsible for abortions. One out of three men. And when I hear a man say he's pro-choice or he's voting for this or that candidate, I know that as a man, to vote for a candidate who's quote-unquote pro-choice is to betray my child again. And I am responsible for an abortion. I didn't consent to it. My girlfriend didn't consent to it, but I was irresponsible. I was a teenager. It was outside of marriage. My behavior led to abortion. I'm responsible. So that if men who are responsible for abortions now take responsibility for what it is that they've done and say that this will not happen again, abortion is country land. When we as Christians hold each other accountable, when I hear Christian politicians, Catholic politicians say, "I'm not going to impose my morality on other people," I want to ask him, when my daughter Jessica, 6 months after conception, was aborted at Illinois Mason County Hospital, whose morality was imposed on my daughter? So I say, we need to stand up. And abortion does hurt men. I have a lot of friends, almost everyone I know is post-abortive. In fact, I thought my mother, my father, my aunt. When we talk about abortion, I always get self-conscious because I know that the waitstaff, Cameron. I was interviewed once by a CNN reporter. She dropped the mic in the middle of the interview and started crying and walked away. I know this is a difficult topic. It's like bringing up drunk driving around a friend who lost a child in a drunk driving accident. Every time we bring up abortion, somebody in the room is being reminded of the most painful experience of their life. I recognize it. But that's why we need to bring it up. That's why we need to bring it up. I think it's probably the greatest cause of depression in America. Just from my personal, I'm not a psychiatrist, doctor. I was a social science major. I can't even add or count. I count to 10. Unless you owe me money, and then I'm really good at but it's important. So I'd like to thank you for all you're doing. And I know certain journalists like to spin it. I remember I took a journalism class in college, and we studied agenda setting. And I saw that all the students were horrified. The reporters would skew a story this way or that way to advance a certain agenda. And when men speak out about abortion, it's probably very tempting for a lot of people who personally been hurt by abortion to try to skew it. And I would ask, for everyone who's listening, just listen to what we're saying. It's very difficult to talk about this and treat us with respect. I would never compare the pain that I went through to a pain a woman. But you cannot deny that abortion affects men. And then through men, for the first 10 years, I became very destructive to women. So if you deny how abortion impacts men, you're hurting women. Because men, oftentimes, like I did, go out of control, became very promiscuous, very callous. Even though I was really pro-life, I was an atheist, I worked around these Christians. If I had to work around Christians to end abortion, so be it. I used to think if these Christians would just get out of my way, I could have abortion. But Joe Shiloh would just stop talking about Mary. And then I looked around, I'm the only atheist in the world who I know is talking about abortion, so it's kind of silly. But that's all I would like to ask you to do. So thank you very much, and I want to thank you for it. And God bless you guys.
Conclusion to the father section, and then we'll take our break. Right.